Real Radio TV online.
Support comes from Meyer Drapery Services. Specializing in custom draperies since 1972, Meyer Drapery offers more than 1 million linear yards of drapery material in their two local wholesale warehouses and retail outlet at 330 North Neal in downtown Champaign. Installation and design services are also available.
Low pressure is moving into the Central Plains today. Ahead of the low here in the Midwest, scattered showers and thunderstorms will track across Iowa and Missouri this afternoon and will affect much of Illinois overnight. A cold front will sweep across the area tomorrow morning. Behind the front, a very blustery southwest wind will gust over 40 miles per hour tomorrow afternoon. Much above average temperatures are expected over the next few days. High temperatures today will range from the upper 30s in southern Wisconsin to the low 60s in southern Illinois and Missouri. Lows tonight will range from the low 30s in northwestern Iowa to the mid-50s along the Ohio Valley. The forecast for east central Illinois this afternoon, mostly cloudy with a high in the low 50s. The wind from the southeast at 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tonight we'll see occasional showers and a chance of thunderstorms this evening. The temperature will hold near steady around 50. The wind will be out of the south from 15 to 20 miles per hour. Tomorrow, partly sunny with a chance of morning showers. It will be mostly sunny tomorrow afternoon. And it will be unseasonably warm and very windy. The high 62. The wind from the southwest at 25 to 30 miles per hour with gusts to 45. Tomorrow night, mostly cloudy, colder, and windy. We'll see a low in the mid-30s. The wind will be out of the west from 20 to 25 miles per hour with gusts up to 35 miles per hour tomorrow evening. The outlook for Thursday, mostly sunny and cooler. Expect a high in the low 50s with a wind from the southwest at 10 to 15 miles per hour. Thursday night, partly cloudy with a low in the upper 30s. The outlook for Friday, showers are likely. There's also a chance of thunderstorms. The high Friday in the upper 50s. At noon Central Time, temperatures across Illinois and Indiana were in the mid-30s to low 50s. At Rockford, it was 36. At O'Hare, 39. In Bloomington, 49. Mattoon reported 47 degrees. It was 51 at Carbondale. At South Bend, 40 degrees. Lafayette, 46. In Indianapolis, 49. Terre Haute, 52. At Willard Airport at the top of the hour, 50 degrees. The sky sunny. The dew point, 26. The relative humidity, 39%. The wind out of the southeast at 13. The barometric pressure, 30.28 and falling. And at 12:40, 48 degrees in Urbana on the campus of the University of Illinois. Ford is betting technology can help relieve traffic congestion around the world. In a speech yesterday, Executive Chairman Bill Ford Jr. said the company is investing in systems that will bypass traffic jams, locate parking spots, and communicate with other vehicles to avoid accidents. NPR's Annie Baxter has more.
Just how chaotic will traffic be once 4 billion vehicles are clogging the world's roads by mid-century? The executive chairman of Ford Motor Company doesn't want to know the answer.
To me, that's a very unappealing prospect.
Bill Ford Jr. delivered the keynote address at a big technology summit in Barcelona yesterday. And he talked about the need for automakers to take on the causes of global gridlock and traffic accidents. He said the stakes for doing so are high. People lose time and money sitting in traffic, and worse.
If you can't move people, health care, and food around, you've got a real issue.
One of Ford's solutions involves getting cars to talk to each other and drive more closely together. That would alleviate congestion. Bryant Walker-Smith is an expert on internet and automotive research at Stanford University. He says just about every automaker is looking into the kind of vehicle automation that could reduce traffic and accidents. Even Google's a player on this front with its concept for driverless cars. But Smith says some of these fancy new automation systems could have unintended consequences.
For example, a driver may feel more confident in checking the cell phone or even checking an email, believing that the system will catch their errors or alert them to issues.
So as these technologies solve some problems, they may yet create others. Annie Baxter, NPR News.
The human brain is full of mystery, wonder, maybe even spirit. But it's also a machine which can be tinkered with. Now scientists are finding that a little adjustment with a unique tool can help people with mental illness. In the latest installment of our radio science experiment, Gabriel Spitzer introduces us to the happiness machine.
Whoa!
This is Clever Apes. The device that Julie is sitting in, well, let's just say it doesn't have all the features you'd want in a happiness machine.
So, Julie, you're sitting in just a kind of like a dentist chair, I guess?
Yeah, it's funny because I was just at the dentist yesterday, except my dentist chair has a massage function.
Julie is in her early 50s, has blonde hair, wears a gauzy floral scarf, and struggles with depression. After years on medication, she was introduced to a new therapy.
Go ahead and lean back. Go ahead and rest your head back. Yep.
Treatment coordinator John Nilsson gets Julie settled and positions a little box at her hairline above her left eyebrow. This machine just sent 40 pulses of a magnetic field about an inch into Julie's head. It repeats every 30 seconds for nearly 40 minutes.
It's kind of like a little, like a woodpecker, I guess, would be tapping on your head.
Julie, who preferred we just stick with her first name, is getting transcranial magnetic stimulation. It's an FDA-approved treatment for major depression, sort of the younger, gentler cousin of electroconvulsive therapy, or ECT. For Julie, it's been a huge help. She's still on meds, but her dosage is down to about a fourth of what it was nearly a year ago. That's when she had the surreal experience of her first TMS treatment.
It did kind of freak me out a little bit. I was like, oh, this is science fiction. But I can't tell you why it works. It just works.
Julie's in good company there, according to her psychiatrist, Terry Hanusa of Glenview, Illinois. Scientists are still a little fuzzy about how TMS, and most other things, treat depression.
Nobody really knows. Why antidepressants really work, no one really knows. Why ECT really works, no one really knows. We know, obviously, these things do work.
They think the key is targeting a particular brain circuit called the left dorsolateral prefrontal cortex. Juicing that spot sends signals down into the brain, stimulating deeper structures that help regulate mood. At Chicago's Rush University, doctors are testing a next-generation TMS machine that burrows in further to get at those inner networks directly.
There are only four devices like this in the world.
Dr. Phil Janicek is one of the leading researchers in TMS. The magnets on this machine are charged by stimulators that send out a jolt.
Think lightning bolt levels of electrical energy. They can do it in a very rapid on-off fashion, so on for a thousandth of a second, off for several thousandths of a second.
Does this thing just plug into the wall?
Correct. It would be the equivalent of the kind of power outlet you would need for a dryer or a washing machine at home.
That brain network near the left side of our foreheads tends to be lethargic in people with depression. TMS basically turns it on using a focused magnetic field, a kind of manual override of the brain function. Kickstarting that one circuit is actually the goal of almost all medical approaches to depression.
You can achieve that with medication. You can achieve that with transcranial magnetic stimulation. You can achieve it with electroconvulsive therapy, vagus nerve stimulation, or deep brain stimulation, all of which are different approaches. And I think quite fascinating, sometimes even some forms of psychotherapy.
Talk therapy.
Talk therapy.
The thing about TMS is it has a light touch. Deep brain and vagus nerve stimulation require surgery. Drugs and shock therapy have side effects. And though TMS may be less established than some other treatments, it's catching up.
About half the patients are achieving clinical response, which means at least a 50% reduction in their clinical symptoms. For a treatment-resistant form of depression, those are pretty good numbers.
Treatment-resistant means the patient hasn't gotten results from antidepressant drugs. That was the case with Edward Pryor. His last job was as a college dean, but he took time off a few years ago, partly because of his anxiety and depression.
Oh, my goodness. It's feeling kind of boxed in, feeling that I'm not a good father, feeling that I'm ineffectual as a person. And with that comes a sense of this lethargy.
Overcoming those feelings with TMS usually takes weeks or months, but Pryor says he started feeling it right away.
There was like clutter beginning to clear in a side of my mind. And all of a sudden, I began to observe that I was thinking clearly. And strangely enough, as I got into my car and began to listen to music, even music began to sound better.
It's pretty amazing that you can just point the happiness machine at someone's head, fine-tune a little circuitry, and change how someone feels. It means thinking about the brain less like a mysterious spiritual life force and more like an engine that a smart mechanic can recalibrate.
You've got emotions that really are not physical. They're not anything you can go in and tweak. And yet addressing the mechanics of the brain has this effect on the emotions.
It is mysterious. That's because humans are really just beginning to penetrate the workings of the real happiness machine, the one inside our heads. Every so often here on Clever Apes, we take a listener's question and go find a smart person to answer it. We call it Ask an Ape.
It's science.
So we've just been hearing about electromagnetic stimulation of the brain, and so for today's Ask an Ape, we thought we'd pick this one particular listener question. The question was just this: magnets? So in the spirit of taking a simple question and making it much more complicated, we're actually going to talk about nuclear magnetic resonance, and to help us do that here is Josh Kurutz.
Yeah, I'm the senior scientist for NMR here at Northwestern University.
One of the machines you work with is next to us here. Could you describe what it looks like?
Yeah, this is a stainless steel cylinder, maybe 7 feet tall. It's basically a big thermos holding liquid helium and liquid nitrogen to keep a big magnet cold.
Now, you use this for NMR spectroscopy. So what is NMR? What is nuclear magnetic resonance?
Many chemical elements have what's called a nuclear spin. This means that if you put it in a big magnet, they line up like little compass needles. And it's kind of like tuning into the radio station of a particular molecule, where we shine radio waves at a sample, and then we get a radio signal back. And based on the fingerprint of different resonance frequencies, we can figure out what different molecules really are.
So you've got a little radio station in there.
Yeah, we effectively do have a little radio station, both transmitter and receiver.
And then they kind of borrow the energy and then feed it back to you. And then by decoding what they're giving back to you, you can tell what's in there.
And then the signal that we get out is actually audio frequency.
If I put my ear up to that thing, can I hear it?
We can't actually hear it if you put your ear on the magnet, but ultimately you can hook it up to speakers.
Can we do that?
Sure. So what I've got in the magnet right now is a research compound that nobody's ever synthesized before, but one of the graduate students here has made it.
And here's what it sounds like. So that really does sound like just like a little bell or a little glockenspiel or something.
Right. That's the analogy we usually use.
So what's the point of all this? Why do this?
We can do all kinds of different things. We can, say, follow a chemical reaction. We can determine the three-dimensional structure of a molecule. But this is also the parent technology of MRI, magnetic resonance imaging.
Well, we've been talking to Josh Kurutz, a senior scientist here at Northwestern University, who's been helping us to understand nuclear magnetic resonance. Thanks so much, Josh.
Ah, you're welcome. Come by anytime.
Clever Apes comes to us from public radio station WBEZ in Chicago.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday, the 28th of February, 2012. It's the birthday of the man who said, "Even on the most exalted throne in the world, we are only sitting on our own rear end." Michel de Montaigne, born near Bordeaux, 1533, a learned man who retired from public life on his 38th birthday to begin a life of study, mainly to examine his own life in a series of essays. His best friend had died, and Montaigne missed their conversations, so his essays were a kind of conversation between himself and his friend. He wrote Don't discuss yourself, for you are bound to lose. If you belittle yourself, you are believed. If you praise yourself, you are disbelieved. Not being able to govern events, I govern myself. The greatest thing in the world is to know how to belong to oneself. I care not so much what I am to others as what I am to myself. It's the birthday of Colum McCann, Dublin, 1965, son of an editor at the Irish Press, middle-class boy, happy childhood, went to work at the Irish Press, and then at 19, after a summer in New York City, he fell in love with America and returned 2 years later. Went up to Cape Cod, bought a typewriter, spent a summer trying to write profound things, biked across the country for a year and a half, 12,000 miles through 40 states, went to college in Texas, met Alison Hawke, who became his wife, and in 2009, his sixth novel, Let the Great World Spin, was a great success, set in the 70s, weaving together the stories of a dozen New York characters, including prostitutes, a young radical